Hello everyone. I'm here just a minute early, just coming on to ensure we're all up and running for our call today. When you join me live, if you join me live, could you let me know that you can hear me? I just want to make sure that my headset is working okay and that everything sounds clear. Ladies, as you're joining me, can you let me know? Good morning, Louisa. You can obviously hear me okay. Beautiful. All right. Good morning, Carol. So nice to see you. Thank you for being here. Oops. Oh, as soon as I move, my lighting pops in and out. Why does that happen every single time? So annoying. Got me a light. I just like it to look really bright. So funny. It's like such a bright day. Why is this happening? Okay, that's a bit better. You know me and my lighting. You can hear me, beautiful. Hi, hi, Amanda. Nice to see you as well. All right. Nice and bright in here. Still doesn't go as bright as I would like. Hold on. There's nothing I can do. I mean, it's bright, but it's just, I feel like it could be brighter. Okay, I'm gonna get started because it's 8 o'clock here in Sydney. Thank you for those of you who are here with me live. I will need to apologize in advance. I have roof repairs happening and they have come in, they've been here since Monday, ripping off and repairing the roof, and they didn't give me any notice, so I couldn't really work around it, but I'm crossing my fingers there's not gonna be too much background noise. I had a coaching client yesterday and she seemed to think it wasn't too distracting. So fingers crossed, there's not too many bangs and crashes as they walk around on my roof today. All right, so at this point of the course, I always find when we get to about the fourth group coaching call, we don't have as many questions coming through, which is just natural. And that's good. It means that the questions that I do have, I can go a little bit deeper into them, spend a little bit more time on them. Just keep in mind that we have only two calls after this remaining. So if you do want to get personalized support, make sure that you are using those calls and sending through questions. I'm just going to answer what we've got here today. Where I want to open up is with a question that's actually really related to the coursework of module 2. Obviously, you're in an integration week now, so you're having the chance to reflect and process and think back over module 2. And as I said in the integration week video, module 2 was a big module, and I think a lot of you are probably still processing everything that came up there. And the question I want to open up with today that I have on my list here is around what we talked about with emotions. And it's funny because I think in that module on body wisdom and the body, a big focus for a lot of people was healing the relationship with the body. And we haven't talked in the Facebook group as much about holding space for emotions, which I think is one of the most powerful things you can learn how to do, is support yourself through your own emotions. Hold space for yourself through your own emotions. Honor your emotions, listen to them. Listen to what your body is trying to tell you through your emotions. And the question here today that I'm going to open up with relates to that, and I think you guys will get a lot from this question. So thank you for asking it. So this woman has said, I like the exercise about finding the emotion in the body. She said, for a long time I felt very explosive inside with a lot of emotions, wanting to cry, break through things, being in rage, and knowing that I'm not really dealing with the feelings, but also not really knowing the source of them. She said, I feel frustrated because in my business at the moment, I'm working 7 days a week, driving in traffic. It's become a big trigger for me as a sensitive being. I've wanted to fight and flight forever, and I want to take a sabbatical, but I can't afford to. I've had severe fatigue over the past over 4 years most days, and I want to shrivel into a cocoon and be away from life for a while to heal. I have no medical answer other than stress. And I know the fatigue is trying to tell me something. And it's weird that the fatigue is the opposite of this emotional volcano that I feel. Any advice on this? And yes, I have a lot to share, and I think you're all going to find this really valuable, what I want to talk about here. There's several points to this question, and these are things that everyone's going to be able to relate to. First of all, we need to pay attention to those times when there is really big emotion in the body, like I hate where I am. She didn't use the word hate, she used the word frustrated, but I know that feeling. I've had that feeling of like, I really don't like where I am and what's going on. You know, my body's saying, it's contracting. I'm feeling resistance. I'm feeling unhappiness. I'm a sensitive being, and I'm just, you know, the environment that I'm in is not supporting me. And that's your body through all of this, whether it's unhappiness, frustration, upset, whatever's going on, that's your body saying, like, this situation, something about what's going on here isn't working for me. I'm not feeling good. This isn't a supportive environment. I don't feel alive. I don't feel inspired. I don't feel excited. You want to pay attention to that. And we're so used to just pushing ourselves forward and pushing ourselves into situations that we think we have to be in. And it's difficult sometimes to take the time and space. But I think the first step is to honor and listen to any place in your life at the moment where your body's just saying no, where there's really big emotions arising, where you feel like, this isn't right for me. And I know I talked to you all about creating inner change, but I 100% support also looking at if external changes need to happen, because your body's saying, where I am, this place that I'm trying to push myself into, this, you know, being a round peg in a square hole, it's not working for me. And so we need to listen to the body when it's saying that. And these emotions that you're feeling aren't wrong or bad. And sometimes we can feel that way around really big emotion, but they're forms of communication. And so the first part here is acknowledging what's going on there. As I was reading this question, and you can relate this to any situation in your life, you know, there's a lot that's going on here. This woman saying, I'm working 7 days a week and I'm driving a lot in traffic and I'm a sensitive being. Most of us sensitive beings will struggle with working at that level and having to show up and output at that level, being in things like traffic that are very stressful. Like, that stuff for our nervous system can be really full on and too much. And for me personally, I get angry. When my sensitive being is not being nurtured and supported, I get anger. Anger is the emotion for me. And when I'm noticing a lot of irritability, frustration, and anger, it's always my chance to be like, it's an opportunity to be like, whoa, Con, like, what's going on? And that's usually a deeper part of me that is angry because my needs aren't being met. I'm not being supported. There's a part of me that's angry because it's not being listened to, it's not being heard. And I often get that anger when I'm pushing myself. I'm not taking breaks. I'm not resting. I'm putting too much on my plate. I'm saying yes when I want to say no. And a part of me is like, Connie, stop. I don't want to do this. So I know for me, those feelings of anger and frustration and irritability come up when I'm not honoring what my sensitive nature needs. So there's a bit to listen to there. And you may not have the time and spaces yet to go deep into the source, because sometimes, you know, we can go into our inner child healing work and do deeper healing work. But maybe initially it's just about paying attention to and really asking. And actually, I'd get you to journal about, what am I frustrated about right now? What am I angry about? What am I unhappy with? What's not supporting me and not working for me? Like, get honest around that. And sometimes we don't want to look at it because we then look at it and we go, well, then what do I do about this? Sometimes we feel like we can't change it. And so we'd rather not face it because it's easier just to sort of push it to the side than it is to have to think about, well, what do I do with this then, now that I acknowledge how I'm feeling about it? I'm glad, Amy. Beautiful. I'm glad you're here. Hi, everyone who's joining me at the moment. So as much as, and this happens to me as well, this is often where I feel anger, is when I deeply want change and I don't believe I can have the change I want, or I won't even let myself think about it. And I immediately say, no, Connie, you can't have that. I don't know. For example, like, this happens a lot with jobs, when we say, I just really don't want to be in this job. And then another part of us says, yeah, but you can't leave. You need the money. And then sometimes rage can start to build because we're like, I hate where I am, but I can't get out of here. And I'm like, you know, you can feel that what comes up, right? And I felt that a lot in my jobs when I used to feel stuck in them. But what I would encourage you to do is listen deeply to yourself, the part of you that is saying what's not working for it, and be willing, sorry, that here goes the roof stuff, they're banging. I apologize about the background noise. For those who only just joined, I've got roof repairs going on. They're on my roof, ripping it off. It's all a little bit annoying. Makes it difficult to concentrate sometimes. But what I would encourage you to do is we need to get the mind on board here, because at the moment you've got a wall between your deeper self, your body, your heart, saying, I want to change, I need a change, I need things to be different. You've got a war between that and the mind. You can't change. It's not possible. It's too expensive. We can't take a break. You can't stop. You've got a war going on between two parts of you. And what we need is the mind to begin to say, you know what? I'm willing to open up to exploring some possibilities of what I can do to support my mind, my body, and my soul. Rather than just shutting down immediately and saying it's impossible, what if I was to open up and just to begin to explore some possibilities? What are my options here? What are my options? And that's when you can get a little bit creative in your thinking, and you might want to journal through it. And these options might feel uncomfortable, they might feel scary, they might feel risky, but just let yourself start exploring them, and you'll immediately feel lighter when you start to let yourself think about exploring some options beyond having to stay where you don't want to be. Those options might be, I could drop down one day a week of work. I could take one day off a week, for example, if you're working 7 days. I could put in an application to work, you know, I could look at working one day a week from home. Now, your mind might immediately be like, I can't do that, I can't do that. But just bear with me on this. You need to play around with options. And what you'll be amazed with is when you start letting yourself believe in the possibility of creating change, doors will open for you. I've coached people through this that many times. Things start to open up when you believe that you can create a change. You could change, if this is your own business, it's not working for you. You know, I've watched people step out of their businesses, take a break from their business, drop down to part-time in their business, and then do some part-time other work that is just not as stressful. Could you, you know, what are your options here? Could you set something up with your work so that it's closer to home? Could you set some things up around work that nurture your self-care a little bit more? I want you to love yourself enough that you're going to be willing to figure out how to make this work for you, how to listen to what you need. And I remember, beautiful Amy, I'm really glad. Tears of truth, she said. You know, I remember being in a day job, and every time I wanted to leave, my mind would say, you can't, you need the money. But what I sat with one day was, okay, I still need a full-time job. I get that. But maybe I could find a full-time job that I actually enjoy going to. So I did a sidestep. So rather than being like, I don't want to be in my job, I want to work for myself, that was too big of a leap for me. But I said, okay, my day job, I have dread and anxiety every day. What if I still could find a day job that brought in the same money, because I need the money right now, but I just enjoyed going there a little bit more? It was a sidestep. And it was a sidestep that allowed me to honor what I was feeling, support myself, and not take a giant leap to the extent that I would be, you know, not able to pay my bills, but I was taking care of myself. I ended up finding another job. It was a 6-month contract. It was great. And I loved the team. It was close to home. It had flexible hours. Like, I loved being there. I worked there for 6 months and I loved it. And it was similar pay. It wasn't really, it was actually a step down from in terms of responsibility, which is what I needed, because I was in a managerial role that was driving me insane. And I took a step down, a little bit of a pay cut. But my God, I got my freedom back. I got my happiness back. And then I made another sidestep, moved into another job that was, again, equal pay. I mean, I wasn't getting any pay rises here, but again, had more flexible hours, a great team. I really enjoyed it. And that job allowed me to have enough energy to start building up my business outside of my day job. So I'm just giving these examples because there's always an option. There's always a way. There's always a change that you can make, and be mindful of the part of you that is trying to tell you you can't change and you have to suck it up and stay where you are. You definitely don't have to. And you need to love yourself enough to sit down with pen and paper and say, what are my options here? Let me think of every single option. And even if they're scary options, maybe I need to start exploring them because I'm not coping right now. Okay, so that can flow into any situation, and we just need to really pay attention to when our body and our emotions are saying, I can't do this anymore. You're allowed to make external changes. I don't want any of you to feel that you have to stay in situations that aren't good for you and then just figure out how to make inner change. Yes, sometimes that is the work, not always. Sometimes the work is to figure out how to get yourself out of things that just aren't working for you at all. And that's self-care, that's self-love. Absolutely it is. Now at the second point to this question, and this is something I want to touch on as well, is fatigue. Now, I'm not a medical professional, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not going to claim to be an expert, and this is just, I'm going to share my opinion. Please know this is just my opinion. I'm not talking about this from a medical perspective, I'm talking about it from an energetic perspective, from my experience, is that for me, fatigue comes from resistance. And resistance, think about resistance as a pushing against something, a resisting what is, a resisting how you feel, a resisting of your truth, a resisting of your intuition, a resisting of your emotions. It's almost trying to push against something that has an energy to it, because very often emotions, truth, you know, what your heart's trying to tell you to do, that all has an energy to it, and very often we're pushing against it. And that's a feeling of resistance, and that can create fatigue. You know, fatigue can also come from trying to push yourself into something where you literally, all of your energy is saying no. And you're like, yes, you need to keep doing it. And your whole energy is saying, I don't want to. I just really don't want to. And you're saying, yes, you have to. Like, it's when you're in flow, you're energized, you're light. So fatigue is something to pay attention to, and I think it can come a lot from resistance. The other thing I want to say about fatigue and emotion, again, this is just my perspective, not a medical perspective, but I want you to think about emotion being like a beach ball. And I want you to imagine you are in water with this beach ball, and you're trying to push and hold that beach ball down under the water. Now, you might be able to really push it down, but to hold that down is going to take energy. And probably after a few minutes, your arms are going to shake and you're just going to start to become tired, trying to hold down that beach ball, trying to hold down an emotion. Emotion has strong energy in it and it needs to move. And if you try to hold it down through suppressing it, denying it, ignoring it, not feeling it, you're going to get tired after a while. You know, when we try to put on the face and just push down what we're really feeling, oh no, everything's fine. And we just got this beach ball that we're just trying to push down over here. So hopefully no one sees what we're really feeling. That's what it's like. And that's where I see fatigue can come from as well. Like emotional, energetic fatigue, you know. When you let go of the beach ball, when you take your hands off and that thing can fly up and just bob along on the surface, you know. Oh, suddenly you can feel light again. So I have found that fatigue has come from trying to deny my truth, trying to deny my heart, trying to push myself to do things that I don't want to do, trying to suppress not feeling and emotions, suppressing emotions. So as hard as it is sometimes to feel things, it's like, you know, the soft drink analogy. It's like taking the lid off and finally letting that soft drink just come out and flow. That's going to free up a lot more energy than trying to hold things in. So that's the link that I see between fatigue and stress as well, because stress is often us, again, pushing things down below the surface and just trying to keep our head above water. And that's tiring. So this could be a big process for you, but I would start with really starting to listen to what you're feeling, journaling through it. What's not feeling good to me? Where am I frustrated? Where am I unhappy? Where am I feeling unsupported? Where is my body saying, I don't want to do this anymore? Whatever it is. What are my options here? Now, write out options that maybe you literally just don't think are even possible. Write them out anyway. These are my options. and start exploring them. Love yourself enough to start to say, maybe I could do this. You know, I've watched this with a lot of my clients who are like, maybe I just drop down one day a week of work. Maybe I do one day a week at home. There's lots of little different things you could do that maybe I take a sidestep and just get a different job that's much more enjoyable to be at. Like for me with my business, I went and did some corporate coaching for a while to take the pressure off my business having to be my sole income. I went and worked through my friend's company doing corporate coaching for a year. Just helped take the pressure off me and freed up some more space. So there's a lot of different things you can do, and they're all very supportive. And then look at if there's any fatigue, look at what am I trying to suppress? What am I resisting? Is it my truth? Is it my heart? Is it my emotions? And that might give you an insight into what's creating that feeling. All right, let's move on to some other questions. I think that I wanted to spend a bit of time there because I think that will be supportive for a lot of you. So thank you for asking the question. That was a really important conversation to have for everyone. Question. I can tell from the coursework that being more in tune and in touch with myself makes life much easier and enjoyable. Sometimes I find it's equally as easy to revert back to old ways of thinking and acting. I know changes will take time, but do you have any advice on the moments where it feels like a fork in the road? We all have those moments, and sometimes it can seem easier to shut off to my emotions through things like food shopping or putting my emotions onto other people rather than being witness to what I'm feeling and processing it. Yeah, thanks for your question. That's honestly, I think what most of us would experience. I think most of us would find that a lot of the time it is easier just to revert to our old habits, and feels like it just doesn't take as much hard work to have to go through the process of consciousness. So, you know, I always say, even if you do revert to old patterns, just if you can do that, if you can almost let yourself do that without the judgment, that's firstly a step. So it's almost like if you're going to revert to the old ways, make it a choice. Because when I look at that crossroad, oh, I'm doing my hands like this, that crossroad, it's almost like, and I see the crossroad like you're at a choice point. We're at choice points all the time. Do I choose my old pattern of behavior? Do I choose my new pattern of behavior? Which one am I going to choose? And I think life's giving us those opportunities all the time. If you're going to go back, if you're going to go to an old way, make it a choice at least. So rather than being like the pattern just takes you over and suddenly you're, you know, buying all these clothes online, eating the bag of cookies, whatever, if you can actually make that a choice, it's already more empowering. And this, I do this all the time where I'm sitting here at my crossroad and I'm like, old way, new way. If I'm going to choose the old way, I at least I'm going to make it a choice. I'm like, okay, I can see that part of me is I could do it this way. Part of me is I could do it that way. All right, right now I'm going to make the choice of eating the food or doing the online shopping or messaging that person I shouldn't message. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to make that a choice and I'm going to own the repercussions of that choice, and I'm going to consciously know that I chose that. So at least you're making it a conscious thing. And you'll feel less like a victim to the pattern then, at least if you're choosing it. And then you can watch what happens, and you can watch like, yeah, that really didn't feel good. I made that choice, didn't feel good. So that's one thing I work with, is making it more of a conscious choice rather than feeling like this thing has taken you over and you had no say in it, which can leave us feeling very disempowered. With choice points, I mean, there's a few things you can do. And I think it is, you know, as I've been saying, it is going to take time for it to be ingrained as habits. One thing that I've often done, now that I'm thinking about it, with emotionally driven choices, like food, something, you know, sex, relationships, love, shopping, you know, all those things that give us a hit. What I've often found is valuable for me is to pause in the moment of that choice point where I'm getting pulled into the old pattern of behavior, knowing I could do the new one, and ask myself, what am I feeling right now? And what am I seeking right now? And when you ask, this is all more consciousness, which again, it just empowers you so much more to make better choices. So when you ask, what am I feeling right now? You can identify what the emotion is there that perhaps you're wanting to avoid, escape, numb out to. Because these are emotionally driven patterns. And I'm going to give you an example that I didn't think I would share this, but I find this really interesting. I'm doing a lot of work around no longer giving energy to men that are not right for me long term, but I'm like addicted. I have an addiction to still getting these little short hits of men's attention, even though I know they're not what I want long term. It's a weird pattern for me. So I noticed it this morning, right? I noticed this feeling of wanting to reach out to someone that I know isn't good for me. And I'm just working through this exercise now myself. If I was sitting at this choice point now, I would ask myself, what am I feeling? What's the emotion that's here? And I just realized when I asked myself it, what I felt was loneliness. I didn't even realize that emotion was there. But when you actually ask, what am I feeling in this moment? You can then find the emotion that's there that's driving the pattern of behavior. And I'm like, ooh, there's loneliness there. I didn't even realize it. And what am I seeking? Well, through reaching out to him, even if he's not the right person for me, I'm seeking connection. I'm seeking that little hit of connection with the masculine. Or for what are you seeking through the food? What are you seeking through the shopping? What are you seeking through the sex, through the whatever it is that you do that's that pattern of behavior for you? And that is interesting for me because I didn't end up contacting him. I talked myself out of it. But this exercise actually has just given me a massive insight right here, right now with you to recognize I was feeling something. And so I was seeking out a little hit from the external world to alleviate that little pang of loneliness. So that can really help you in those moments. And then you can ask yourself, and I would ask myself, okay, Con, if you're seeking connection or if you're feeling loneliness, what's a healthier way to support yourself through loneliness? And what's a healthier way to meet your need for connection? And that's where I might be like, oh, I really need to get out around some people, or I need to phone a friend, or I need to do something that helps me feel connected to myself, whatever it is. Now that process for me there, that actually created a massive realization and shift for me. And to remind yourself that the thing, that little hit of gratification that you're seeking, remind yourself that you know it's not going to meet that need long term. Like the food, the clothes, they're not going to meet your need long term. They're only a hit. So how can I meet that need long term for me if I know that that feeling of connection or whatever feeling you're wanting to feel is important? What can I set up to meet that need long term for me in a healthy, sustainable way? So I've used that process. I just kind of uncovered that right there and then. Yeah, I would do that because all these things are driven by an emotion and a need. I'd love to learn how you manage phone computer technology. When you say you keep it on silent, do you mean not even vibrating? Do you still have notifications for texts and emails? Do you designate certain times of day to respond to them? Do you shut off text going through your computer? And she's asking quite specific questions, but she just wants to know the specifics of how I manage stuff like this. And if anyone's here on the call who wants to even share how you guys manage this stuff, because we're all different. We're all struggling with it. We're in the technological age. We're in an age that none of us have ever been in before, where we are so plugged in and so overstimulated with notifications. Like I even have to have a washing machine and dishwasher that beep at me when they're finished. And that thing beeping at me, asking for my attention, I'm just like, oh, I'm just like, fuck off. I get really irritated by it because that's our whole life. We have these things popping and beeping and pinging and constantly needing stuff from us. And it drives me bananas. So I try to eliminate that where I can. I can't unfortunately turn it off on my appliances, but far out, it's frustrating and too much. So yes, my phone has begun messaging through my computer. It just started doing it and I'm trying to figure out how to turn that off. Same with FaceTime. My phone just started ringing FaceTime through my computer out of nowhere and I'm in the middle of doing things. So I'm trying to figure out how to turn these things off because I absolutely don't want that stuff pinging up on my computer personally. So you can turn that off and I do suggest turning that off. unless you want a message through your computer rather than your phone, I don't need it coming through two places. With notifications, you can set all your notifications around the way they come through for you. I do it so I just have the badge icon. So it will show on, say, my Facebook app, my Instagram app, my email app, a number that shows the number of notifications there. So rather than having them, I don't have them pop up on my locked phone screen. I don't have them make a noise. They make no noise whatsoever, and I don't have them pop up. It's just if I go onto my phone, I'll see on each of the apps if there's something that needs my attention on there. That's how I've set that up. I do keep my phone on silent, and I typically don't have it on vibrate. Sometimes I do. The way I am with communication is that people can wait to hear back from me. That's just how I am. And not everyone has that in their life where, you know, some people might get upset not hearing back from them. I don't answer phone calls either majority of the time. And I will reply to someone when I have the time to do so. That's how I use my phone. But in saying that, look, I'm on my phone quite a bit. I check my phone quite regularly. So I guess I'm not going long periods of time without it. So the amount of time I spend on my phone is still an issue for me. It's not something I'm perfect at whatsoever. I spend way too much time on it. You can start to track your screen time. So maybe set that up in your phone. You can track screen time. It can show you how much time you're spending on your phone, which can just be helpful because it's sort of a bit of a rude awakening. And then I'm pretty sure there's a way, it's either through the iPhone or you can install an app that when you reach your capacity, so say, I don't know if you set a time of how long you can use certain apps for, but then it will actually like close you off and you won't be able to access the app after that set period of time. I've watched my friends set it up. I haven't set it up yet, but I'll have a little bit of a look. Amy, I get mad at the microwave beeping. Oh my God, isn't it infuriating? Catherine, I keep everything on silent, not even vibrating. Keep notifications at a very minimum. We'll really go in and look at them when I want to. Yeah, so that's what I think is empowering, is when you consciously choose when you're going to go in and look at it. That's what I feel is the difference. I can't stand it when I'm in the middle of something and my phone wants me, or the dishwasher wants me, something wants me. Or as you guys would know, my door buzzer, which seems to go off every time I record a video for you. When, you know, someone wants me, I'm just like, excuse me. So I actually think it's much more empowering when you decide, as Catherine said, you're going to go to your phone and open it up when you have the headspace to do it, versus I can't stand when I'm in the middle of something and a notification pops in and completely breaks my focus or interrupts what I'm doing, for example. So I think that's a supportive way to set it up, absolutely. I would much prefer, I feel like it's this thing pulling at me when I have notifications. I can't stand it. Do I have a lot of apps or just bare necessities? I try to keep it bare. I mean, there's so many apps these days that we can be using, and a lot of them are very valuable. But I try to keep it as bare as possible. And I don't have the only things that pop up on my screen are my PayPal notifications, because I like to be notified when I make money. I find that a bit fun. And I like to wake up in the morning and see on my screen if money's come through overnight. So for me, that's a bit fun. That's a positive notification that I like to get, but everything else is turned off. And look, yeah, I try to keep my apps to a minimum, but you know, I mean, maybe just look through and just see if there's not some that you're not using, some that you don't need. And yeah, and I would say try not to have your notifications pop up on your screen, and try to turn sound off if you can. That's helped me a lot. Any advice on keeping some of this journey to yourself? I've got into the habit of making my husband and parents sounding boards for all of my emotions and anxiety, which hasn't been the healthiest. As I'm making progress, how do I just let those changes show for themselves rather than oversharing all the details of every class and how I'm planning on implementing them? So everyone's on the slow down and tune in journey with you. I'm sure my husband would just enjoy talking about normal things and reaping benefits of my changes rather than me talking about them. Well, ask yourself, why are you sharing them? Why are you talking about them? What do you, you know, every pattern of behavior that we run serves us and as I was saying, gets our needs met in some way. What need do you get met? What do you get from sharing this with these people? Maybe look at that. Maybe even if anyone here live wants to share how, you know, do you share your experiences of the course and what you're working on with your people in your life, or how do you just be the example? And I think the way that we can inspire people the most is through being it, not telling them. This may not be what's unfolding for you, but I know for me, when I was wanting to change people in my life, you may not be trying to change them, but let me just use this example. The most valuable thing you can do is be the example, is be an example of it, is radiate a different energy and let them notice it and let them ask you, wow, you seem so different. Oh, you've barely been on your phone. Or, wow, you seem so calm today. Is it related to that course you've been doing? What have you been working on there? Let them ask you. And I find that's much more empowering. And they may not ask you. So don't expect them to. But sometimes when we're really working on being the change, people will notice it in us. Like, oh, you seem so happy. What have you been doing? You're like, oh, I've been meditating and journaling and it's really helping me. And they're like, oh, really? Tell me more about that. So that could be one way, you know, we can definitely uplift and inspire people in our lives through being it. And then they can get curious to what's changed in us. And yeah, I would just, I would explore in yourself what it gives you to be telling them about everything you're working on. Is it about proving something? Is it about convincing them of something? Is it about, does it help you feel like, does it validate you that you are changing, that you are doing the work? And then again, like, you know, everything I talk about in this course, just witness that tendency and make a decision, maybe before you and your husband come home. Maybe you're on your way from work, or, you know, he's on his way home, and think to yourself, make that conscious choice before you step into that conversation that you're not going to bring it up tonight. Maybe just practice that, setting that intention. Okay, for tonight, I'm going to see if I can just not bring it up all night and talk to him about some other things. What are some other things I'd love to share with him? And so sometimes if we know we're going into a situation where we tend to do something we don't want to be doing, we can pre-prepare for it. You know, on your way home, before he gets home, setting an intention, making a decision, and getting really clear that you're going to practice something different tonight. So that might be something to keep in mind. Look, I guess for me personally, I'm someone that I tend to more so keep things to myself. I think that's more of my natural tendency, and we all have different natural tendencies. But I did used to be much more someone that would need to talk to everyone else about my emotional stuff in terms of, I loved drama. I used to love drama. I used to always love to tell people dramatic stories about what was unfolding for me. And again, this may not be what's playing out for you, but I think maybe sometimes our underlying need is for connection and is for some form of validation. And maybe we need to learn a more empowered way of meeting that need. So I think I used to meet that need through drama, through always having something dramatic unfolding that I have to jump on the phone and tell them about. And I think what changed was I remember I just decided I wanted to be a different person in my friendships. Maybe think about that, who you want to be in your relationships, the type of woman or partner you want to be, and then the types of conversations that would unfold in that situation where you're in your power. We are not needing people to be a sounding board. We are not needing anyone to, reassure or validate anything that you're experiencing, where you're fully whole and empowered. How does that woman show up? How does she engage in her relationships, her partnerships, her friendships? And I think that's what happened for me. I decided I wanted to be a different person in these relationships, and then I began showing up differently as a result. Might be something to explore. And final question here. All right, so If anyone's on the call and has anything they want me to touch on, now is your time to type it in the comments, because I'm going to move on to the last question and we'll be wrapping up after that. But if you're here and you want to ask anything or share anything, please type away. How do I let go of associating places with certain things and sad emotions? Associating places and things with sad emotions. After a rough few years, recurring fights due to me not processing my emotions, my husband and I are moving. How do I manage the desire for a fresh start by not bringing certain things with us that vibrate at a lower energy and don't inspire happiness? But also keeping in mind that I shouldn't be blaming external things for my emotions. And she shared some further examples with me around some things that had been going on for her, and that there was some sort of really unsupportive, negative, toxic kind of things going on that she's really wanting to break clear of. She said there's a negative association around her old phone number and old email based on the communication that happened through those platforms. You know, so this does tie into some of our conversations around inner change and external change. And as I've been saying, I do want you to be looking at changing within, because if there is a tendency to have these these tendencies to not process your emotion and say throw them onto other people. I mean, that's definitely something that you want to be working on. It sounds like you are working on it, which is beautiful. And you want to be learning how to take responsibility for that and support yourself through your own emotions, where perhaps you, when you're feeling something, rather than talking to someone, you actually distance yourself and say, I'm going to need some time before we talk about this. You go into, say, your bedroom, you light a candle, you play some music, you pull out your journal, you pull some oracle cards, you support yourself through what you're feeling. Maybe you're already setting that up, but that's, say, how you would start to begin to process it on an inner level. I don't think there's anything wrong with releasing things from your external life that carry a heavy negative energy, that activate memories from a painful time. I mean, this is why we throw out the photos and the letters and the memories of our ex-lovers, because it just reactivates emotion that we don't need to go back to. You know, when they talk about, say, clearing out your wardrobe, I've heard people talk about this, that you don't have to, but you can let go of any piece of clothing that has a memory to it that's not a happy memory. Because these things, they're all energy and they do store emotion and energy in them. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, a friend of mine just moved house, and she moved out of a house that she was living in with her husband, and she's now setting up a new house for herself, by herself, and she's got whole new furniture. She got rid of all the old stuff and is completely refurnishing the new place with brand new furniture. There's a reason we do that. It's because it brings in a clean new energy that has no memory associated with it, no pain associated with it, no like, oh, him and I sat on that couch 6 months ago when we broke up. None of that. And I think it's really supportive to have fresh starts and clean slates. So I think you do it two ways. I think you can absolutely not take anything with you into the new that has the vibration of the old. If you can clear out the clothes, clear out the, you know, this woman was talking about changing her number and changing her email. I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see anything wrong with that at all. If it will help you close off this old chapter, if it will stop reactivating memories of the past, just like I have an inbox full of messages and emails from my ex-partner while he was traveling and we would email all the time. I don't still have that as my email, and I don't go and look at that every day. I've intentionally archived that. There's a reason we do these things. We need the boundaries. And I think it's equally as supportive. I think you need to look at both inner work and external things always to help you. I don't think you can just do one or the other. Okay, I can see some comments coming through. I'll come to you guys in one sec. If things have a lower vibration to them, don't bring them with you. If anytime, you know, I moved into this apartment actually, and pretty much everything in here is brand new. When I moved in a year ago, well, I probably got a couple of pieces, everything in here actually, all my furniture that I can see, fridge, I got rid of everything when I moved out of one of my places, and I moved in here with just literally boxes of, I don't know, clothes and items. All my furniture, I started afresh, and it's been It was like the best thing I could have done. So I'm all for that. I'm all for it. Sometimes it's a very fine line. I'm just reading out the comments here, between a support system and relying on people to heal or do the work for you. Yeah, I think that's the way I made the difference too. In addition to what you said, Connie, about wanting to be a different person. That's a beautiful point. Thank you, Catherine. There's a difference between having a support system, which we absolutely all need. I'm not encouraging anyone to say, oh, I don't need people. I'm the source of everything for myself. I hope I've made that clear through all our classes that you being empowered doesn't mean you don't need people at all. And we need support. But yeah, that point around relying on people to heal you or do the work for you or rescue you from your own pain, that's a big one. I think a lot of us are looking to others to rescue us. And that's something I've noticed in my coaching, and I really try to make sure that that dynamic doesn't play out, because it's easier for people to come to me feeling like I'm here to rescue them. And that's not empowering to anyone, is it? Anytime your power is outside of yourself, it's not empowering for you. So thank you, Catherine. That's a beautiful distinction. Amy, any way to cry when you feel like you want to, but you just can't? Oh. That can take time. I've heard that from a few people actually, that they find it really hard to access the emotion and cry. It can take time, and I wouldn't force it. I guess what has helped me the most is to get into my body and to be in, as I think what blocks us off being able to access the emotion and cry is being in our head. So for me personally, over the years, what has helped me learn to cry and process emotion is being able to get into the body. So remember I was saying in one of the videos where I'd noticed I'd had the headaches and I'd been massaging, I think, part of my body, and I began to cry. When I really got into the sensation and got into my body, then I felt I could open up the emotion. So things that have helped me over the years are dancing. I found dancing has really helped me unlock emotion. I'm going to say an example here, which hopefully doesn't trigger anyone, but I find orgasms can actually open up emotion. They open up the body for women in particular, and they can really help you get into the body and process emotion. Stretching. So I've talked a lot about things like morning or evening stretches where you can close your eyes and stretch into the body, find the parts where there's tightness and tension, and hold your focus on it and stretch into that. I find that can open up emotion. Yoga, going to yoga classes. Who's ever had that experience of lying in Shavasana and you are just bawling because that whole class just opened up your body and opened up the emotion? Yeah, music is another one. I find if I can't access an emotion, you're playing a really angry song, a really sad song, can help activate it for you. Body work, so massage. Again, I found getting massages, sometimes I'm lying there and halfway through the session, I want to start crying because as I've been massaging, it's opened up. So there, a range of different things. And also getting support. Some of the times that I've learned to cry the most is in coaching sessions. I actually find that when I sit with a practitioner, because I have my own coaches and mentors, they're the times that I cry the most. Which is very strange because, sorry about the banging, because those people are holding a certain level of space for you. And I find it with my coaching clients, sometimes they'll come to a session thinking they're fine. The minute they start talking to me, they're in tears. They're like, Connie, why do I always cry when I talk to you? It's because sometimes you've got a practitioner holding a certain amount of space for you that actually really helps open up. So maybe get some, work with a therapist, work with a coach, work with, some type of, I actually found this in my kinesiology. I had kinesiology on the weekend. I thought I was totally fine. Within the first 5 minutes, I was lying on the bed in tears. So sometimes going into those types of places can help with the emotion too. But maybe don't try to force yourself to do it alone if you just can't. Or even watching a sad movie. I find if I watch a really sad movie, it starts to make me cry, and then it helps me access other sadness that's in me. Yeah, beautiful. Movies and music help, and then reflect upon them, Catherine said. Beautiful idea. Catherine, I have a question, maybe a bit complex. Can you give us a few pointers for when we're grieving? I lost a very good friend who I even thought would be a partner eventually, and it's a very heavy energy to handle. and doing the work and listening to your podcast about grief, and it soothed me a lot. Yeah, so that podcast, I did talk about it there, in there. I'm glad you listened to that one. That one I probably didn't go into as much depth as I could have gone into because I, yeah, didn't even know how to articulate it then. One of my girlfriends, Claire, has a podcast, and she said she really wants to interview me on the podcast all about grief. So that will happen at some point, and her and I will talk about it more. A couple of things I may have meant, I don't know what I mentioned in the podcast. I can't actually remember what I said because that was very recent after Dad died that I recorded that. What helped me was, one, when it first happened, as heavy and as dark and as painful as the emotion was, I just fully went into it. I let myself get so dark and so heavy. Now, I don't know how recently your partner's passed. I'm talking about the window right after Dad died. There was about a two-week period straight after Dad died where I was in the darkness, and I didn't do anything to even try to get myself out of it. I was like, I'm going to let this get as fucking dark and nasty as it needs to get. And it was pretty bad. But that actually really helped me, because I was able to process a big chunk of the emotion very quickly through fully surrendering to it. And also, if anyone else has ever lost someone close to them and you have tips around grief, you can type in the comments. It's very personal. You know, what I've been learning about grief is it comes in waves. I don't think it ever goes away. I think it's always with you. But you go in waves and cycles of it. I would say talk to people who have gone through grief or gone through something similar. I found it very comforting to speak to other people who have lost significant family members or friends. Talking to my sister, obviously, because she lost her father as well, that has been an incredible support for me. So I actually find talking to people who have gone through something similar, that helped me a lot, because it made me feel less like my world has fallen apart and more like death is a natural part of life. We're all going to die. And death, it's amazing how many people have lost significant loved ones or people close to them. And when you hear other people's stories, for me, it was really comforting. I didn't think it would be, but it was really comforting. I also think let yourself ask for support. Tell your friends what you need. For me, for my friends, I think most people had no idea how to support me and no idea what to say or what to do. So letting them know, you know what, I'd really love if you just sit with me for a few hours. And we don't have to talk about it. I just really need to be with someone, you know, to let people know what you need. After a certain period of time, I remember thinking, okay, I've got to learn how to just get back on with life now, because I started to go so deep into my grief that I was actually becoming concerned that I was becoming depressed, because as you said, it's very heavy. It's a very heavy energy to process. And I remember spending a couple of days, honestly, just sitting on the sofa, staring at the wall, not moving all day, not making food, not eating, not talking to anyone. And I remember after a couple of days being like, Con, this isn't healthy, like you're not okay. So there, at that point, I began thinking about how do I bring the normalcy, if that's a word, back into my life again. And I just started revisiting my foundational self-care practices. And I knew for me, self-care was having food in the fridge. So I went to the farmers markets. It was cooking was part of my self-care. I committed to having a bath every day as my place to support myself. And moving my body. I just started walking every day. And I started bringing in back in a couple of foundations that made me feel normal again. And then I let my grief coexist with me. My grief is still with me. My grief is, it's 18 months since my dad died and it's still with me. So I don't think you can completely eliminate it. But if it hits you, and it will hit you in the weirdest of times, like I'm in the supermarket and I see the toothpaste that my dad used to use and I've lost it in the middle of the supermarket. And grief is like that. You'll think you're fine and you'll be fine about some things, and then other things you'll fall apart. And then when that happens, you let yourself fall apart. So I think letting yourself feel through it all But then drawing on people for support, talking about it as much as you can. Talk about it as much as you can, because you will think you're okay. And we'll talk, you'll be like, I'm fine, I'm okay with it now. And then you're usually not. So keep talking about it with people, keep asking for help. And then also try to bring in some routine again. And I went back to coaching pretty quickly after Dad died because I just needed some structure back in my life. And that can actually really help you start to move forward. I hope that's helpful. I can't see who's replied. Less than a week ago, he was in a coma for a year and a half. I'm also living abroad. I've missed what the start of that comment was. Oh, Catherine's saying it again. Hang on. He was in a coma. You were living abroad. Okay. Okay, Catherine, I'm glad that's helping. Look, it's a really difficult thing to share guidance on because it's so personal and it's, oh, you know, it's a messy, chaotic emotion, but feel everything. Feel it as deeply as you need to feel it. Like I said, get support, talk to people as often as you can, find people who have been through something similar, who can really empathize and understand what you're feeling. And then where you can build structure and normalcy and routine back into your life to help you move forward, but really fucking fall apart. Sorry for the F-bombs in today's call. Let yourself fall apart every time it hits you again. Yeah. And support yourself through that. Final question here from Carol. How do you hold your own when you seem to trigger others and not on purpose? Oh, I trigger people all the time, Carol, and it really bothers me. I really don't. It's something sometimes I don't like about myself because I don't know. I can see when I can feel when I trigger people. I'm sure you probably can as well. Our sensitive people can feel that, and I can see it immediately on someone's face, and it's an uncomfortable feeling. The two ways I handle it is, one, if I trigger someone because I have legitimately said something hurtful, maybe without meaning to, or I do this with my mum often, I often hurt her feelings without meaning to, or I've overstepped the line or I've been inappropriate, whatever, you know, you have the courage to apologize and have an honest conversation about, oh my God, I so didn't mean that. I'm so sorry. That came out the wrong way, whatever it is. So I always like to clean those things up if I have, you know, without meaning to hurt or upset someone. Absolutely. But if I check in with myself and I'm 100% certain that what I shared was my truth, it was truly what I was feeling, it was just me being me, you know, there was nothing negative, vindictive, harmful about it. It was just me being me, and for whatever reason that person had their reaction to it. If I can reconcile in myself that I'm happy with how I showed up and the choice that I made and the person that I was, that helps me then say, okay, I'm okay with that. I don't feel like I did anything wrong. I feel like I honored myself. I was standing in my power. I was in my truth. That was right. And if that person had a reaction, I have to trust that I am in some shape or form a teacher, a mirror for them, and I've activated something in them that they need to then go and process. And that's not my responsibility then to do anything about that. I've got girlfriends who I know I trigger, and they trigger me because we're friends and colleagues. And sometimes when one of us is really shining and being successful, we can easily get triggered by each other because we can be a little bit envious and we can be a little bit like, oh, you know, she's doing so well or whatever. And if I ever feel my friends pull away from me and I can feel like I've triggered them, I just let it go. I give them space. I don't go to try to make it better and fix it. I'm like, okay, I can feel that maybe me being me right now has triggered that person, and I just need to go let them have their process, and I give them space. And I trust that they might come back to me when they're ready to. Let them work it out themselves, in themselves. Just like if someone's triggered me, I'm like, okay, I need to just distance myself for a little while and figure that out in myself. But as sensitives, we can feel when people pull away from us. Have you ever felt that? I can feel the minute someone energetically pulls away from me, even if they're not pulling away physically. And it hurts my little sensitive heart. But I've learned how to just breathe through that feeling. just remind myself my only job is just to be in my light, is to be in my power, is to be in my truth. And if I have a good loving intention behind what I'm doing, I have to remind myself that what I did was right. I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm obviously helping, you know, we're all helping each other heal by triggering each other. So you're playing a powerful role for someone right now to go process something in themselves. But if you've triggered them because, you know, there's anything that you did was out of line, have the courage to have a conversation around that. I often have to do that when I'm like, oh my gosh, that totally came out wrong. I'm so sorry. I really hope I didn't hurt your feelings with that. I always clean it up if I need to. But if you know that you were just standing in your power and holding your own, people have a reaction when they start to see you be different, when they start to see you be more powerful, more assertive, more confident, more honest. And if they're not used to seeing you like that, they'll have a reaction to it. And you absolutely should not then waver from who you truly are to make that person feel better, because you're not serving them then. Actually, them having a reaction is serving them to grow and evolve beyond their pattern, rather than you trying to rescue them from their pain. That's not your job. I hope that helps, Carol. Okay, a lot of comments coming through. I'm coming to the end, my loves. I am going to have to jump off. I'm just seeing now lots of questions coming through. Natasha, I don't know if grief ever does go away completely. Yeah, I agree. Oh, I've just lost all my lighting there for some reason. Yeah, I agree. I lost my little brother very suddenly 20 years ago. Wow. And still occasionally get hit with a wave, but the waves are further apart. That's a beautiful way to describe it, Natasha. The waves still absolutely come, but they're just further and further apart. Beautiful. And time does heal. It absolutely does. Unfortunately, it really just does take time. Sometimes my mom will trigger my brother by openly appreciating what I do for her. Triggers him all the time. Well, that's something between the dynamic with your mum and your brother. That's not your responsibility. And perhaps you've been taking on responsibility of keeping the peace in the family. And, you know, that's his process, my love. That is his process, and you got to let him have it. You got to let him have his process. Stefania, I'm going to have to jump off soon, but let's quickly look at your question. I'm thinking of getting a psychic reading, but kind of scared. What are your thoughts? My thoughts with psychic readings personally are, I like it when people provide guidance, practical supportive guidance, rather than predicting my future. I'd be mindful of people claiming they can predict your future and tell you what's going to happen. I don't so much believe in that personally. I believe there's a lot of free will. I believe there's a mix between what, you know, because I think a psychic, they get a picture of the energy that you're in now. So they'll read your energy now. But something might change in you over the next 6 months, and that might change the course of your destiny. And they don't know that. So I wouldn't put too much power in them. I wouldn't put power in them being able to predict your future. I would not give more power to them than you're giving to yourself. I only like to work with those types of practitioners that more so can give me guidance and help me see things that maybe I can't see, and will maybe give me general themes around what they might sense unfolding for me. But I'd be just careful of those ones where you feel like they're going to predict your future and tell you you're going to die. In saying that, something very interesting. My family work, we've been seeing a particular psychic medium on and off for a while. And I booked a reading with this woman since after my dad died, because I wanted to talk to my dad. And I did. I talked to my dad for an hour, and it was incredible. And it was so my dad. Like, it was so my dad. And it was amazing, actually. But what was funny was my sister talked to this woman, and this woman said to her, very soon you're going to have an incident where you're in the hospital for 24 hours. Don't worry, everything's going to be fine, but it's going to happen. Now, I'm normally really anti that type of stuff. What was so interesting was it actually happened. And I don't want these things to be self-fulfilling prophecies, but something happened with her husband, and they ended up being a few days after that reading in hospital for 24 hours with him, and he's fine. But it manifested. My sister was like, oh my God, that psychic was totally right. So look, I'd prepare yourself going in that maybe you will hear things you don't want to hear. I don't know, but I just wouldn't put so much power in them. People think that they're all knowing. They're just one person that's tuning into energy. They don't know more about your life than you know. You know, And I would just look for someone who can more so offer you guidance and wisdom and help versus telling you, oh, you're going to meet your soulmate in 6 months. And then you put all this power in them and you lose your own personal power. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. Okay, loves. That's a lot of talking. So I'm going to leave it here. Thank you for all your questions. Thank you for those of you who are here live. I will upload this to the members site soon. And I will talk to you all soon. Enjoy this final week of integration. And then next week, we're in module 3, aren't we? Beautiful. I look forward to that. Lots of love to you all. Bye.